Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. But stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it is the weekly worldview. Welcome back to the show where we don't take ourselves all that seriously, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. So glad to have you back for another week. I had another great week. It's been a great week around the McBurney compound. Got to skip church again today. Well, I didn't actually skip church. I just went to another church, a small church. Had a wonderful time. I was invited in to do a personhood petition and got there in time for their morning Bible study. And I walked in, and the leader of the Bible study said, "Well, do you want to give us your spiel?" So I did. And I went on and on for about a half an hour, and finally somebody tapped me on the shoulder and pointed at their watch. And I said, "Oh, are we out of time?" And we were out of time. Anyway, it was a great time exposing good folks, exposing them to the realities of the fact that we are literally hanging on to the ragged edges of civilization here in a country that was founded by, well, the only real Christians left in Europe came here and founded America. And now we're in quite a state. In fact, let me start in the news. This is from MSNBC, believe it or not. We're going to go to MSNBC. The headline screamed this morning to me, "The Lockerbie bomber Al-Megrahi is dead." That was the headline. Dateline Tripoli, the former Libyan intelligence officer convicted of the 1988 Lockerbie bombing that killed 270 people, has allegedly died in Libya. That's according to his son. He told NBC News on Sunday that Al-Megrahi is dead. Now, I stuck the word allegedly in there because, I mean, just like Obama, I mean Osama, until I see the body, I'm not buying it, okay? Until I see the body, I'm just not buying it. I want to see his body strung up on a bridge somewhere. But I guess there is some good news. Chen Guangcheng, the Chinese anti-abortion advocate, is in America. Yes. But the question I have is, Is he free? You know, this is the brave new America that we live in, where we help release terrorists, because we helped release the Libyan bomber, Al-Megrahi. We helped get him out of jail so he can enjoy his last 3 years, if indeed he's even dead. This is the brave new America, where we help release terrorists, and we shuttle the real freedom fighters between prison camps under cover of darkness. Yes, I said a prison camp. He's going to NYU, for crying out loud. Telling me that the Chinese aren't going to be able to keep their thumb on him at NYU, especially since they're holding the rest of his family hostage back in China. I don't know what kind of dirty deal was struck with the devil to get Mr. Guangcheng out of China and into custody at NYU. But the details will no doubt be as shocking and disgusting as the details we learned in the days following the release of the Libyan bomber, Khalid Al-Megrahi, from prison. So welcome to America, Mr. Guangcheng. But it's not here anymore. I would welcome you to America, but it's just not here anymore. We will be following that story. And we will be hoping for the release of pictures of the dead body of Khalid Al-Megrahi to confirm what his son has allegedly told NBC, which is allegedly a news-gathering organization. We will be following that story. Another thing we follow regularly here at the Weekly Worldview is our justice file. And as you know, I am an advocate of capital punishment for the guilty. Yeah, that's right. I'm an advocate for capital punishment of the guilty, and I'm against capital punishment of the innocent. Had that conversation this morning with a wide-eyed young Christian at the Risen Lord Church in Denver, Colorado. Had to explain myself. She wondered why I would be for the death penalty, but against abortion. And I said, well, it's as simple as not killing the innocent and executing the guilty. That's as simple as it is. It's not that complicated an argument, really. I would think that it would be fairly obvious to anyone, any thinking person, that we should punish the guilty and that we should protect the innocent. But for a couple of generations now, the young people have been literally brainwashed into thinking that killing innocent babies is a right to be celebrated, and killing guilty murderers and rapists and kidnappers is something to be ponderous about, something to be confused about, something to struggle with, because we're just not sure. But you can be sure, ladies and gentlemen. In fact, I think God wrote it into our very conscience, that we should protect the innocent and that we should punish the guilty. I mean, it was always fairly obvious to me, but apparently it's not so obvious to a lot of younger people especially. In fact, there's a Bible verse, I believe, that we can go to. Warning, 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 Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead for those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity. We know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would like to censor anyone who would ever dare even consider the possibility of quoting a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. We'll go to Ezekiel in the 13th chapter, where God speaks through the prophet and says, will you profane me among my people, killing people who should not die, and keeping people alive who should not live? Well, that's right there from Ezekiel. Fairly simple. It's one sentence that explains the whole controversy between the pro-life, pro-death penalty sides. It's just not that complicated, folks. It really isn't. So there you have it, right from the prophet's mouth. Just in case you were wondering, we understand here at the Weekly Worldview, and, well, we're hoping and we're trying to help you understand as well. But let's go to the justice file, because there was a big story up this week in the news, another headline screaming from the computer screen at me, the wrong man was executed in Texas, says a probe. Yes. The man's name is Carlos de Luna, and he was executed in 1989. Well, now, law professor James Liebman and students at Columbia Law School have now spent almost 5 years poring over the details of the case of the Carlos de Luna execution. And they say it's emblematic of a legal system, of legal system failure. Now, these are the same people, I'm certain. Law professor James Liebman, I'm sure he's one of the people who tells us that America has the best justice system in the world. After all, he's a very highly paid member of it, being a law professor and all. But when it comes to the death penalty, folks like James Liebman and his poor brainwashed students at Columbia School of Law obviously think we have the worst system in the world. The students in their study, their five-year review of a case that's, well, how old is this? 89. That's over 20 years ago. And now they take 5 years to go through the case, and they say that the wrong man was executed. Witnesses' accounts were contradictory, they say. Okay, so obviously we can't rely on witness accounts only, because they were contradictory. Now, at the time he was arrested, well, let's go back and we'll talk about the actual crime that took place. It was a February 1983 robbery at a gas station, and Wanda Lopez, a single mother, was stabbed to death in the gas station where she worked, in the coastal Texas city of Corpus Christi. That night, Lopez called police for help twice to protect her from an individual who was in the gas station with a switchblade. For whatever reason, the police never responded. 40 minutes after the crime, the robbery, DeLuna was arrested not far from the gas station. Wanda Lopez had been stabbed to death. And as I said, eyewitness accounts were contradictory, but at the time, police reported that DeLuna said at the time of his arrest, quote, "I didn't do it, but I know who did." And he said that he saw Carlos Hernandez entering the service station. Now, DeLuna had run from the police. He says he was running because he was on parole and he had been drinking. But I want to point to this. If Mr. DeLuna said he didn't do it, but he knew who did, and he named Carlos Hernandez, that's reason enough for me to believe that Mr. DeLuna was involved. If he knew Carlos Hernandez's name and named him as the suspect. Carlos Hernandez, by the way, repeatedly admitted murdering Wanda Lopez in jail later. He died of cirrhosis of the liver in prison. Carlos Hernandez did. Mr. DeLuna was executed by lethal injection in 1989 after spending some time on death row. A lot of these young punks in law school who want to go back and pick over the bones of old capital punishment cases in order to discredit capital punishment, which is their goal. They come to it with a bias. They come to it with an axe to grind. They will strain out a gnat and swallow a camel whole. And I'm not buying the fact that Mr. DeLuna wasn't involved in any way in this crime. And in my opinion, if you are involved in a capital crime, you are deserving of capital punishment. But let's get a quote here from the law professor, the good law professor from Columbia School of Law. He says, "Unfortunately, the flaws in the system that wrongfully convicted and executed DeLuna, faulty eyewitness testimony, shoddy legal representation, and prosecutorial misconduct continue to send innocent men to their death today. But when you go into his office to hire him, he'll tell you it's the best system in the world. And the university system, by the way, especially the law schools in America, they're the best in the world as well." It's just disgusting. These college kids being brainwashed to believe that we are incapable of rendering justice. And these are going to be the future apparatchiks in the legal system. And the one thing they're not sure of is how to administer justice. In fact, the one thing they are sure of is that we can never know anything absolutely and that justice is too elusive. So they'll be trained and taught how to make deals to get killers off and to lie in court and to profane God by keeping people alive who should not live. All right. Now, I want to get to that. That leads me into another story because I want to talk about killing people who should not die and what that has led us to. Listen to this story from The Independent over in the United Kingdom. A British citizen in Bangkok has been arrested after Thai police found six roasted human fetuses packed in his luggage. I said roasted human fetuses. Reports say the six fetuses had been covered in gold leaf after being roasted as part of a black magic ritual. The man is believed to have been attempting to smuggle the roasted human fetuses covered in gold flake into Taiwan. Apparently, infant corpses are being offered to wealthy clients via a black magic services website. Now, this fellow who got arrested for being in possession of the fetuses, he could now face a $620 fine and a year in prison for smuggling the dead bodies of six innocent people, perhaps to be consumed in some kind of black magic ritual. If there was ever someone who needed to be executed immediately, it would be this guy, to put the fear of God into anyone who would participate in something this horrific. Now, the paper reports that these corpses were bought for $600 a piece, from a Taiwanese national, and this fellow was trying to smuggle them.
If he sells
one of the roasted fetuses, he has enough to pay his legal fine, and he could probably talk his way out of any jail time, perhaps by offering some black magic cures to the judge himself.
The devil says.
I mean, that story sounded like it came right out of the devil's newspaper. But do you think we're any better? Do you think we're any better here in America? I mean, yeah, this is the Far East. You know, they're into black magic and whatever over there in, where was this guy? He was a British citizen. He was in Bangkok trying to smuggle human corpses that were roasted and prepared for black magic rituals into Taiwan. But are we any better in the West? Are we any better here in America? Listen to this story. Cash Burnaman is a 6-year-old South Carolina boy. He's traveled with his parents to India seeking treatment for a rare genetic condition that has left him developmentally disabled. He has it's an incurable condition, and it's so rare that it doesn't have a name. He's had to take an artificial growth hormone for most of his life. This kid is sick, and he's 6 years old. Well, his parents have journeyed to the other side of the globe, this according to CNN, and paid tens of thousands of dollars to have Cash undergo experimental injections of human embryonic stem cells. Now, you see, in the Far East, with the black magic kooks, they roast their fetuses and cover them in gold leaf, and they consume them somehow in a black magic ritual. But here in America, we're having parents feed the dead bodies of innocent children to their own children in hopes of curing a disease. We're much more clinical here in the West, but it's really the same thing. Except apparently this is legal in India. There's a clinic there where you can go and get dead baby injected into your aching joints or into your disabled children. It'll cost you about $25,000 for a series of injections. CNN reports that embryonic stem cells come from 4 or 5 day fertilized eggs, and they have the ability to turn into any type of cell in the body. Note to CNN editors, there's no such thing as a fertilized egg. Just so you know, it's one of my pet peeves. If you have a human ovum and fertilization occurs, you no longer have an ovum. You have a blastocyst. Call it a zygote. Call it embryo. Call it whatever you want. It's not a fertilized egg. It's a person, as a matter of fact. Anyway, the CNN gushes on about how much promise there is. Human embryonic stem cells could be used to repair damage or regenerate tissue. It could be fabulous if we'll just eat our young. The article goes on. Researchers have developed another source of stem cells, skin cells. Have you heard about this? That's right. Scientists have learned to turn the clock back on your very own skin cells, so they're like embryos, with stem cells that have the same blank slate properties like embryonic stem cells, but without the controversy. Controversy? Was there a controversy? Because I read this entire article from CNN about this family injecting the tissue from dead babies into their own son. I read the whole article, and they never named the controversy. I mean, they used the term fertilized egg. So the uninitiated reader might wonder, what is the controversy behind embryonic stem cells? You wouldn't know what it is by reading this CNN article. But hopefully I've clued you in as to exactly what the controversy is. The problem is that those among us who are civilized and sane are repulsed by the idea of devouring the flesh of babies to cure diseases. And I would put a question to you, especially if you're a young person, if you're in college, if you're getting your education. I just want to ask you a question. If you could cure every disease in the world by killing one innocent person, would you do it? If the answer is yes, you are a murderer in your heart. If the answer is yes, you are a utilitarian on the level of Adolf Hitler. If the answer is yes. Okay. Let's go back to the CNN article. I just wanted to get that question out there in case there are any young people who don't quite understand what the controversy is, because there is a controversy. I was yelled at by a young lady. I was at the public library in a suburban Denver town, gathering signatures. And she flung the door open and she said, "You know, I just came to the library to have a good time. I didn't want to be bothered with this." And I said, "Well, you shouldn't expect there should be child killing with tranquility now, should you?" She slammed the door, went back in. CNN reports that there are no approved embryonic stem cell treatments in the United States. However, George W. Bush, Republican president, pro-life Republican president, he thinks, or he said, and his Food and Drug Administration did approve two experimental clinical trials, two lines, and two clinical trials started in humans using treatments made from human embryonic stem cells. Now, one of the clinical trials to repair spinal cord injuries was stopped. Now, CNN reports that it was due to the high cost of this type of research, but if I'm not mistaken, when I heard they had stopped it, they stopped it because there were no results. In fact, cancerous tumors were appearing in the patients, and they were seen as doing more harm than good. The other trial, clinical trial, to restore vision in people with macular degeneration is still underway, according to CNN. So the trial was stopped, and whether it was due to the high cost of the research, as CNN reports, or whether it was due to the appearance of cancerous tumors and the opinion of the researchers that the experiments were doing more harm than good, nowhere is it mentioned any kind of ethical or moral dilemma, because that's pretty much off the table in the world of CNN and biological researchers these days. But we want to make note of it here at the Weekly Worldview, just so you are aware, there are some people. Now, many of us don't have PhDs, and we're not involved in clinical research at the cellular level. But we know that we should not be eating babies to cure diseases. There's some of us left. And I certainly hope that you are among us. Because I'm afraid there are fewer and fewer of us. And the further we get from 1968, the worse it's going to get. I don't know why 1968 jumped out at me. Sort of a landmark year. Of course, it was the year I was born, so it was a good year in some respects. But if you think about it now, two generations have been nurtured in the idea that the killing of innocent people is an option. And it's pretty scary out there, folks. All right, but let's go to the war file for news that doesn't make us all feel so personally horrible. This is just some news that, well, it might get you upset, and it'll definitely let you know what's going on at the highest reaches of government. This is a story from the Washington Examiner. When they published a book last August about the nation's fight against terrorism, two authors, New York Times national security reporters, immediately felt heat from the Pentagon for dishing too much operational information about the killing of Osama bin Laden. Yeah, one of the authors, Tom Shanker, he co-authored this book called Counterstrike, The Untold Story of America's Secret Campaign Against Al-Qaeda. And his other author was Eric Schmidt. Well, Tom Shanker, one of the authors, says, quote, I was stopped by a very senior officer in the special operations community who basically wanted to rip my lungs out for writing this book. Now, that's something I would pay to see. So, a senior officer in the special operations community ripping the lungs out of a New York Times reporter? Tell me that would not be huge pay-per-view, especially in the Bible Belt. I know I would sign up. But that aside, Mr. Shanker revealed at a counterterrorism expo this week that the information that he was being accused of leaking in his book by this extremely irate officer from the special operations community, that very information, he says, came directly and officially from the White House. He says there was no garbage can digging operation, there was no deep throat, there were no secret black sources. He got the information that should not have been leaked from the White House, officially from the White House. So what did Mr. Shanker say to this senior officer after he was assured that the officer would not be allowed to rip his lungs out? Mr. Shanker said, quote, "I said to the officer, sir, that information came officially to us from the podium at the White House. Your civilian leaders make choices about describing missions, perhaps for their own partisan political ends, perhaps to show the nation that their tax dollars are being spent well, but that's the way it is. Colonel, sit down and shut up." Well, he didn't say sit down and shut up because his lungs would have been ripped out. But he did say, that's the way it is. And he also says he offered some advice to the colonel in the special operations community. His advice was, sir, if you make general, this is a part of your new world. And I can just imagine this colonel restraining himself from doing any lung shredding, which would have been appropriate at this time. But I can also imagine, well, I can just tell you, folks, from my time in the service, from what I remember, the best colonels never make general, and they never will. The colonels who win wars never make general because they don't want to be politically correct. They don't want to be a part of this new world where they leak information that puts their troops in danger. And, I thank God above that there are colonels in our military who are upset with these two. And they should be equally upset with the White House because what these two reporters said is basically true. Who leaked all this operational information? Barry Ho and his minions to pump up his public image, make him look like a tough guy. And make no mistake about it, Barry Ho is a tough guy. Barry Ho is someone who is not afraid to kill both the guilty and the innocent. He's not afraid. In fact, it's something he's gotten quite good at with his drones. Which, by the way, I support the use of drones to kill these terrorists. I think it's a great thing. I think it's a little scary that Barry Ho has the joystick on some of these drones. And I look skyward sometimes when I'm starting to get that nervous feeling that Big Brother is watching. And then I realize I probably just had some bad fish or something. Anyway, it is a brave new world with the drones. And with Barry at the controls, a man who's not afraid to kill and then leak about it. He's not afraid to kill and then get other people killed to score political points off it. That's your president. That's our president. That's what we've come to. Yeah. They're all criminals. They're all liars. They're all deceived. They're liars. And they're full of themselves. And it doesn't matter if they have an R next to their name or a D next to their name. It doesn't matter if they're black. It doesn't matter if they're white. It doesn't matter if they're capitalists or socialists. Our political leadership has been trained for a generation by our religious leadership. They've been trained in situational ethics. And it's a failure of the church that has produced Barack Obama. Not that he would have been produced, but he would have been down at Occupy Wall Street, dealing with how to move his own feces out of his campground. He wouldn't be sitting in the White House had the church not fallen asleep sometime back around 1968. It's the Weekly Worldview, and we're back. I don't know. I expected some more guitar. I thought there was more to that. No, that's fine. That's fine. Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Ay, ay, ay. So, I was talking about the criminals in government. And it's funny. They can't even escape their own handiwork. Let's go to Fox News. Story out of Washington, D.C., less than 3 months after he was robbed at his vacation home in the Caribbean, Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer has been targeted again, this time by burglars at his house in Washington, D.C. That's right. His house was broken into on May 4th. And cutlery and candlesticks worth about $3,500 were stolen from the Supreme Court Justice. I just find it ironic, that's all. Here's a man who, for his entire career, has presided over the exponential expansion of criminality in America. And his own house has now been broken into twice. Although once, I guess, was out of the country, so we can't hold that against America. But in Washington, D.C., they ripped off his cutlery and his candlesticks. Do we have any candlesticks? We don't even have any candlesticks. If we did have candlesticks, I would hope that they'd be worth at least $3,500. But Stephen Breyer robbed, that's right, a victim of the best justice system in the world. Yeah. And the story does go on to point out, ironically, U.S. District Judge John Roll was among six people killed in a gunman's rampage at a Tucson shopping mall last year. Another federal judge falling victim to his own handiwork, in a backhanded kind of way. It's like 6 degrees of separation in the justice system. If you go back and you can find the six links that connect the burglar directly to Stephen Breyer, and you can probably find 6 degrees of separation between Judge John Roll and the murderer who killed him there in Tucson. It's one of those deals. It's all related. All right. I don't have any good news. I don't have any funny news. I might have some funny news, but it's kind of rough today. I tell you what. I wanted to ask about the Facebook IPO. Or I guess I didn't want to ask because nobody's going to answer me because we don't take calls. People have asked me, Doug, why don't you take calls? And I say, well, you know, if I wanted to listen to callers, they would have a show and I would tune in. But they don't, and I don't take calls because, the main reason is I don't have my phone system rigged up to take calls. I could probably do that if I hired somebody to come in and wire it all up, but it's just so much trouble. Anyway, they would just keep interrupting me. But I wanted to make a point about the Facebook IPO and falling gas prices. So you saw the Facebook IPO. All the insiders who got schnookered by this fairly smart kid, they walked in and paid him $38 a share. I mean, he got his money. They got their $100 million. Or was it $100 billion? $100 million, $100 billion. You know, who's counting? Anyway, Wall Street shelled out all this money to Mr. Zuckerberg and his teenage accomplices. And they turned around to sell them, and the rest of the people weren't as suckered. They weren't able to jack up the price and sell the stocks. And now they're sitting there with a whole bunch of Facebook stock, and it'll be interesting to see what happens on Monday. It'll probably hold the line at 38. I don't know. I don't know what their books look like. But anyway, not a great sign for the expanding economy and the recovery. The Facebook IPO, kind of flat. And then falling gas prices. I know none of us like high gas prices. I'm not a fan of high gas prices. But one thing I do know is that gas prices generally should go up as we head to Memorial Day and into the summer. Gas prices should be creeping up in a healthy economy. And they're not. They're falling. And I just remember the last time this happened was 2009, after the last big collapse, the penultimate collapse, it may be called, in the not too distant future. Anyway, I have some concern about the economy. Everybody wants to talk about jobs, and they want to talk about illegal immigration, and they want to talk about jobs, and they want to talk about the economy, and they want to talk about taxes. But nobody wants to talk about the underlying structural problems in that we have a socialist government that has legalized theft and murder and adultery. Those are the problems that are creating the economic crisis. If we can solve those problems, the economic problems will be solved as well. When we can return ethics and morality to the government and the people, the economics will follow. But as long as we keep treating the window dressing without repairing the shattered pane, then it's all indeed just window dressing. And the storm is going to continue to blow through the window, ladies and gentlemen. And I asked myself last night, actually I asked my extremely attractive audio engineer, I asked her, I forget what we were watching. I think we were watching the news and they talked about some movie that made some billions or trillions or zillions of dollars. I forget. It's a movie about a comic book or something. And I asked my wife, is it possible that you can build an economy based purely on entertaining one another? Is that possible? Has it ever happened in the past that we've had an economy based purely on entertainment? I don't know. I know that there is the service economy where we serve one another, and some of us don't actually produce anything. I don't produce anything. I sell things that other people produce. I don't make anything. So I don't think we have to necessarily have a manufacturing-based economy. I don't think we have to have an agrarian economy. Obviously, we moved from an agrarian economy into an industrialized economy. Now we've moved into a service and information-based economy. But are we moving toward an economy that's based purely on entertaining one another? And is that possible? And is it sustainable? Something tells me it's not. Because entertainment tends to evolve from entertainment into lasciviousness and immorality. Oh, I know what it was, because the news article mentioned that the largest or the most profitable industry in America is online pornography, which is considered by some to be entertainment. I mean, that's again where we've come now, is that filth and destructive pornography is considered, number one, it's considered a viable industry, viable for crying out loud. It's the most profitable industry in America. And it's considered entertainment when it should be considered criminal. Yeah, pornography is a criminal act. The production and dissemination of pornography is criminal. It should be punishable by law. Should be against. It's not free speech to objectify women and to destroy marriages and to pollute and corrupt the minds of young people. I'm sorry, it's not free speech. It's a criminal act. Can we build an economy based on entertaining one another? And is that where we're going? I don't know. I see the signs of it. It's very disturbing. I'll have to run that one by my pastor, because maybe I'm overstating the case there, and I don't want to do that. But I was just struck by that as I watched this report on the news about the entertainment industry and just how big it is and what a big part pornography plays in it all. It's all just very disturbing. Something for you to think about as you go on through the week. But let's take a look at the fruit of a culture that has legalized theft, adultery, and murder. Let's go to Yahoo News, the Associated Press. A Cleveland woman was charged with murder on Saturday in the stabbing death of her best friend. The two women were sitting in a running parked car last Thursday when they got into an argument. Well, Kimberly Black, one of the women who was arguing, left the vehicle, went to her house, returned with a knife, and stabbed her best friend, Cherise Swain, in the face and neck. Yeah. The wounded woman then stepped on the gas pedal and hit the assailant's two young children who were standing by the car. Two-year-old Kamisha Ruffin was killed, and her one-year-old sister, Taraji, was seriously injured. The assailant, Kimberly Black, was found naked several blocks away and arrested. Witnesses report that the two women had been, quote, best friends since birth. In fact, they considered each other cousins. And nobody interviewed on the scene immediately could tell authorities what started the argument. Ironically, the assailant was arrested naked less than a block away from the location of the now demolished house where the remains of 11 murdered women were found in 2009. You remember the Anthony Sowell case in Cleveland. By the way, he's still alive. He murdered 11 women. He's still alive, and he's appealing his murder conviction. He has been sentenced to death, allegedly. He's being allowed to live, hire lawyers. He's being educated, medicated, kept warm in the winter and cool in the summer. After murdering 11 women and being duly convicted of that murder. So this is the fruit of what we've produced. And it's like the conversation I had this morning at Bible study with my new friends at the Risen Lord Church in Denver. It's the church that bears the guilt for all of this. Because the church is the only civic and community-based organization that can stop people from starting to believe that the legalization of theft, adultery, and murder is okay. Who else is going to stop that? I mean, if you look at civil governments throughout history, in most cases, it's been the government that advocated and did all the most horrible crimes. So we can't rely on the government. We can't rely on the rule of law. We really must rely on the church. The church has to stand up and say, no, the government does not have a right to steal half of my income and distribute it to other people who didn't earn it. It doesn't matter how good your intentions are. You don't have the right. It's wrong. It's the church that has to stand up and remind the politicians that adultery is a crime, because most of the politicians are adulterous, lecherous perverts, if allowed to go and carry on the way they would. I mean, look at the Kennedys, for crying out loud. They're America's most vaunted political family, and they're a bunch of perverted deviants. Or they were. And I imagine the ones that are living still are, in my humble opinion. So we certainly can't rely on the politicians to draw the line and protect marriage and protect women from being objectified through pornography. It's the church that has to teach them that. And it's the church that has to remind the politicians and the political leaders, no, you can't murder innocent civilians and innocent people. But you see, the church, somewhere back around the time of my birth, the church decided that they were going to let the politicians separate the church from them, from any influence in civic life. And so now this is where we are. And it's a failure of the church in America. America was the last great hope. And the Christians fled here from persecution across the sea. And they built this shining city on a hill. But at some point, they were bamboozled, they were tricked, they were lied to. They were told that we could coexist with the secular state, the secular state being free from the influence of religion. And let me give you one more piece of fruit off of that tree. Let's go to the LA Times. A 33-year-old Knoxville, Tennessee man reportedly has 30 children with 11 women. 9 of those children were born in the last 3 years. Yeah. This fella's name where's his name? I'm certain it's here in the story. Desmond Hatchett. Desmond Hatchett has 30 children with 11 different women. The report says he is struggling to make ends meet on his minimum wage job. Yeah, I know. And you know that I'm a strong advocate against homosexual behavior and the normalization of homosexual behavior. But this guy's giving normal people a bad name, for crying out. It's no wonder homosexuality is pouring out of the closet when heterosexual immorality has been allowed to simply run wild. It's just the next... We've broken down that boundary, and now homosexuality's next, and then I don't know where we go from there. I don't even want to get into it because it's disgusting to think about it. But this guy is giving normal, non-homosexual people a bad name. An assistant supervisor in Knoxville with the Knox County Child Support Clerk's Office. She's a supervisor, I said, with the Knox County Child Support Clerk's Office. She says under the law, there's nothing officials in the government can do to force Hatchett to keep his pants on. There's nothing. See what the government says? When they're forced to face serious questions about morality, they say, well, there's nothing we can do. We can't. There's no law against serial fornication and producing children out of wedlock and then taking no responsibility for their upbringing. There's no law against that. Well, see, in America, there used to be a law against that. Number one, there were laws against adultery on the books. But number two, there was a social stigma that was so strong that it prevented men from rutting like wild bucks in the forest, for crying out loud. But that's all been washed aside. It's all gone, folks. The social taboos are gone. The laws are gone. And the governing officials have no clue how to do anything about this. Here's one saying, there's nothing we can do. By the way, this assistant supervisor with the Knox County Child... What is an assistant supervisor? What is that? Anyway, was that like Aaron Burnett? Now, we can joke about Aaron Burnett, my dear. But the risk is that nobody listening to this show has any idea who Aaron Burnett is. Aaron Burnett is the host of a show on CNN called Out Front, which I don't know if that has some kind of lesbian undertone. I don't know what the whole deal is with Erin Burnett, but she's on CNN. So more people probably saw her on a daily basis when she was an assistant manager at the Dollar Tree than who watch her now on CNN. Anyway, how did I get into Erin Burnett? I want to make jokes about people that nobody knows. Anyway, I know, because of this assistant supervisor position, and I thought about Aaron Burnett's career as an assistant manager at the Dollar Tree. Yeah, that's what did it. That was the connection there. But anyway, back to the story about the man who has 30 kids with 11 women and nobody knows what to do. The assistant supervisor with the Knox County Child Support Clerk's Office says she cannot say whether any of this man's children receive public assistance. She can't say. Well, I will say right now, I guarantee you they do. And I'll guarantee you most, if not all of them do receive public assistance, because this guy has taken no responsibility for taking care of any of these kids. And by the way, so he's paying child support for 30 children to 11 different women. Some of the mothers of Hatchett's children get only $1.49 a month in child support, which would lead a reasonable person to believe that some of these kids are receiving public assistance. And if the assistant supervisor with the Knox County Child Support Clerk's Office or any of the other officials in the greater Knoxville area need any advice on what to do, please come to my church. Because we will tell you what to do. We have the answers. Now, the odds of them stumbling into a church in Knox County that has the answers are pretty slim, I'm sure. But I can assure you, if you come into Denver Bible Church in just a brief counseling session, we could help the city supervisors, the mayor, even the governor of Tennessee know what to do. Third and headed for home. We're a little long on that last segment. Don't mean to throw off anybody's schedule, but we are coming up on the end here, so I better get to it. I've got a story from NBC in Washington. A male student was suspended from a Southern Maryland school for wearing girls' clothing, and the incident has sparked a big controversy there in Calvert County, Maryland. So there's a boy shows up at school wearing a skirt. He's suspended. There's a controversy. Why? Because nobody... Are you sure that's wrong? I mean, you could probably run this story by 99 pastors in Calvert County, and they would not exactly know, you know, exactly where to draw. Maybe, perhaps, tolerance and you know, forgiveness. And, I'm not saying we need to forgive him for anything. I didn't mean to say that. Anyway, Warren Evans is an openly bisexual student. That's unfortunate. He's an openly bisexual student at Calvert High School. He was suspended for violating the school's dress code by wearing a skirt. Now, he says the school is discriminating against him. Yeah. He says he didn't violate any dress code. Yeah, that's he said. Listen, he said, I don't think so. Why not? It didn't say anywhere in the code of conduct or dress code that says boys can't dress like girls. It's not explicitly spelled out. Now, the school district's dress code, their policy states that schools can regulate the length of a dress. Because back when the school's dress code was written, the concern was girls wearing miniskirts, not boys parading around as girls. It probably never entered the mind of the bureaucrat who wrote the dress code at the Calvert County School that he need to explicitly put in there that boys cannot wear dresses. But welcome to the new America. You need to update your files because we've lost all touch with anything that has to do with anything having to do with decency and morality. And we have to spell it out explicitly for these young people because they're two generations removed from morality. Yeah, in fact, students at the school who were interviewed, they say that they've seen female students wear skirts of the same length as the one the boy was wearing, but they were not suspended. So obviously, Mr. Evans is being discriminated against because his skirts were no shorter than the girls' skirts. That's the student. That's what they think. That's what they've been trained to think. I mean, I hate to use the word brainwashing, but they've been brainwashed, basically, to not know right from wrong. And they can't intuitively recognize deviancy. You can't count on them to have that as a reflexive action like it used to be. the students have been, well, they've been trained and educated by a generation of teachers who were allowed by the church to disconnect themselves from God and morality. And so that's what we end up with. And then we end up with a bunch of idiots too, by the way. Not just morally corrupt and deviant, but academically challenged as well. Listen to this out of Tallahassee, Florida. The Board of Education decided in an emergency meeting last Tuesday to lower the passing grade on the writing portion of Florida's standardized test after results showed a drastic drop in student passing scores. Yeah. The results indicated only about a third of students would pass this year's tougher Florida Comprehensive Assessment test, compared with a passing rate of 80% or more last year. So last year, 80% of the students passed. This year, it looks like only about 35% are going to pass. You know what that tells us? There was lots of cheating going on last year, and they stopped it. Either that or they changed the test. Let's dig deeper into the story. The Florida Education Association spokesman, that's the teachers' union, okay? The teachers' union spokesman says, we need to examine what led to this. This guy's the head of the teachers' union, and I'm sure he said that with a straight face. He says he doesn't want to just paper over the problem. He wants to find out what led to this. By the way, the teachers' union, they oppose the use of standardized tests at all. So that he knows what led to this. Well, we obviously need to stop testing. It's just embarrassing. Let's see here. This is the first year students in schools will be assessed on the basis of tougher test scoring systems. That's right. They've changed the scoring system. Let's see if we can get to the bottom of what led to this by going through this. This is our... from the Orlando newspaper down there. The school board agreed at its regular meeting last week not to let any school drop more than one letter grade this year to help them adjust to the rigorous new standards. So this is a microcosm of education and child rearing for the past 40 years. When you see it degenerating, when you see it falling apart, the answer is to lower the standards, so that we all don't feel bad about how lousy everything is. This has been going on in every segment of society, especially academia, for 40 years. And this is just the perfect example of it. Let's see. I read through the article, and I cannot for the life of me get to the bottom of what might have led to this. Let's see here. The tests, students... say the tests have become more difficult to pass. School grades factor into such decisions as closing low-performing schools or making faculty and administrative changes. That means firing teachers and administrators. Lower-rated schools also lower the property values in the community. So officials in some school districts have been preparing parents for bad test scores by sending letters home with students explaining that the tests have become much more difficult to pass. They're actually sending letters home to parents saying, we failed to educate your child. We just want you to be prepared for that. Now, but other officials are also pushing back. School boards in Palm Beach and St. Lucie counties have passed a resolution against what they say is an over-reliance on high-stakes testing. Board members say the exams reduce time devoted to teaching and put unhealthy stress on students. I couldn't make that story up, right? I couldn't make that story up. Let's go to Providence, Rhode Island. They're going to pass a homeless bill of rights in Providence. The bill would specifically prohibit law enforcement, healthcare workers, and potential landlords or employees from treating homeless people unfairly because of their housing status. You're not a bum anymore. You just have a different housing status. Yeah. The sponsor, some liberal senator, said that most Americans probably aren't aware of the daily discrimination faced by homeless people. In fact, isn't not giving them a home, isn't that discrimination in and of itself? The fact that you won't give them a home means you're discriminating against them. I mean, that's the natural that's the natural progression of where this leftist senator wants to take Rhode Island. He hears what he says. Nobody decides one day they want to be homeless. Has this guy ever hung out with homeless people? Has this guy been in a bubble? Anyway, he says, and nobody deserves to put up with the stuff these people have to deal with every day. It's time we did something to stop the appalling things that go on. Okay, Senator, how about letting them into your house if you're so appalled? Huh? Let them into your house and give them the keys to your bathroom. Stop discriminating. Anyway, advocates, this is a story from CBS in Connecticut. Advocates for the homeless said the Bill of Rights shouldn't pose a burden to cities or police departments unless they are actively discriminating against the homeless now. I guess a policeman asking someone to not urinate and defecate on the street, that's going to be considered discrimination. Now, one bum said he is routinely questioned by police when walking, sitting in a park, or waiting for a bus. He said store clerks will ask him to leave the store before he can even make a purchase. He says restaurants won't serve him. And twice recently, he was waiting at a bus stop only to see the bus drive past. He says one driver even waved at him, would not pick him up. Obvious discrimination based on body odor. Yeah. Has he thought about the fact that maybe the store and the restaurant don't want him stinking the joint up? And the bus driver can't take him being on the bus for one more trip? He just can't take it anymore. It's because of the smell. It's not discrimination. You're a homeless bum and you stink. Okay? For you young kids out there, if you don't wash and you start to stink, you can expect to be discriminated against on a regular basis. All right. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, this is from thehill.com, which I think is a newspaper or something like that in Washington, D.C. We have crossed the Rubicon. The NAACP has just passed a resolution expressing their support for homosexual marriage equality. That's right. The NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Queer People. No, it's not queer people. It's colored people. But for some reason, they're wanting to lump the black folks in with all the queers again. And this upsets me. Because I don't think that being black and being a queer have anything at all to do with each other in any way. And I don't think the civil rights battle of the 1960s has anything to do with all the fags pouring out of the closet these days. Anyway, here's what the NAACP says. Civil marriage is a civil right and a matter of civil law. The NAACP's support for marriage equality is deeply rooted in the 14th Amendment of the United States and equal protection of all people. That's just great. So the same 14th Amendment that they say gives men the right to defile one another and then publicly brag about it and get married is the same 14th Amendment, by the way, that ensured the personhood of black men and women, but they deny that same 14th Amendment contains the protection of the personhood of the smallest and weakest among us. The NAACP doesn't talk about the killing of innocent children. No, they don't. But they do want to talk about homosexual marriage. All right. Freedom to Marry, which is a group of queers, a pile of queers, they praised the NAACP decision. We've got a quote from Evan Wolfson, the president of Freedom to Marry. He says, the NAACP has long been the nation's conscience and champion for an America where all share equally in the promise of liberty and justice for all. Oh, I love Superman. Today, the NAACP resoundingly affirmed that the freedom to marry is a civil right and a family value that belongs to all of us, and that discriminatory barriers to marriage must fall. So the NAACP vote comes after President Obama announced his support for homosexual marriage and then raised $15 million at a fundraiser in Hollywood hosted by some actor. Anyway, the report says while many in the black community have opposed gay marriage in the past, political watchers believe few African-American voters will swing their support to presumptive GOP nominee Mitt Romney over the issue, even though Mitt Romney instituted homosexual marriage in Massachusetts. That's all I've got, folks. This is the Weekly Worldview. I'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. I want to thank my friend, my other brother, Darrell, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview studios. My friends at KGOV, Denver Bible Church, Personage USA, American Right to Life. May the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.